Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of season 11 of Movie Room Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries, Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off their 3-day stint here are Joe and Cassie Tura, the famous Polish actor and his daughter. Welcome back, guys.
Hello, Rob. Thank you.
Hi, thank you.
It's great having you guys back.
It was great to be here.
Yeah.
It is good to be back.
Yes. So episode 8 begins with Sobel continuing with his letter narration and ends with the men trying to play a little trick on Sobel. We're gonna find out tomorrow if it works, but whatever. We'll see. So we ended things yesterday with basically a long shot watching all of the men get onto the this transport, and you know it told us a lot about the amount of men that they were cramming into the ship. Do either of you have any idea how many men were actually on the ship? What would be your guess?
412.
What? That's low.
I know.
That's a lot of people. I was gonna say like 4,000.
You see, Joe, I think you got to go more with Cassie's estimations.
Yeah, I know. She's smarter than me. I always say that.
So let's put it this way: the ship itself was it was called the Samaria, the SS Samaria, mm-hmm. which was an old India mail liner and a passenger ship that was converted to a troop transport. It was originally built to carry 1,000 passengers, and it carried 5,000 men from the 506.
Oh, I almost said 5,000.
Wow.
Yeah, they it was dreadful conditions, which they don't. They don't show us here about how bad the situation was. They were rationing fresh water. You know, the men, as we see in the movie, had to wear life jackets at all times.
Mm-hmm.
They had to carry around all their ammunition and canteens with them. So because of the small area, they were bumping into each other. They needed to sleep in their clothes. Each bunk, and we see here, well, we're going to see shortly, you know, that there are four, it's stacked four high, you know, the bunks. Each of the bunks was given to two men, and they each had to alternate who would be sleeping. You know, either every other night one of them would sleep in the bed or the hammock or whatever you want to call it, and the other one had to just find some other place to lie down. Apparently, the stench was horrendous.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. They served them two meals a day. And the people, they were all trying to get as much food as they could, you know, this whole thing, but the food was apparently terrible and it looked like slop, but they ate it because they were hungry.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And, apparently they didn't really have much to do while they were there. So they were either, you know, looking out at all the other ships that were around, you know, in this convoy, or as we will shortly find out, gambling. They mm-hmm. play poker, blackjack, craps. There were a large amount of money that kept being passed back and forth. You know, between people who were winning it. Like one of the guys won $125 one night, and the following day lost it all. The men who wanted to read had to try and scrounge around to try and find books because there were not that many books.
Wow.
Sobel wanted to try to lead the men in calisthenics, but there was no room, and therefore it became another Sobel joke. You know, trying to get them across. You know, that thing. And so, I mean, we saw yesterday what day this left. They left on September 6th. Okay, and according to the book, they landed in Liverpool on September 15th. So they were just about 10 days on that on that ship. Not necessarily something that you really want to do. There, again, by the time that they that they got there, the men were completely ecstatic that they were able to finally get off this boat.
Yeah, it must have been long days.
Yes. Right. So as the ship moves out, we see a bunch of the men standing, you know, topside, looking out as things move, and we see a picture of the Statue of Liberty as they pass the Statue of Liberty, which again goes back to what we've been talking about through the course for the last few days. You know, the subtle references here. You know, this is the last time that most of these men will ever see the Statue of Liberty. You know, and the irony is that the symbolism of the Statue of Liberty is the exact opposite. It's the first thing that people see. You know, it's the first, they think about the first time they see it, you know, because that's bringing them to America. And here these men are leaving America. Again, they're going to do something great. It's not a question of that, but, you know, it's just very interesting, the shot. So as we're watching the shot, though, we continue with Sobel's narration. With that, he cannot fail, but will win glory for himself, make you proud, and his country grateful for his service in its hour of need. Signed, Herbert M. Sobel, Captain, Commanding. So, yeah, it's a nice shot that they give us here. Then they give us a shot inside of the transport itself, and you see how packed it is. You see that everything is stacked four levels high with the way people were sleeping. A lot of commotion, and we see how difficult it is for people to get by one another because they are all wearing their life preservers at the same time. You see Skip Muck and Don Mularkey trying to get through the crowd, and Muck goes, "Right now, some lucky bastard's heading for the South Pacific. He'll get billeted on some tropical island, sitting under a tree with naked native girls, helping him pick coconuts so he can hand feed the flamingos." Now, it's always funny that people always want to be somewhere else. It doesn't matter, you know, in what type of movie, in what context, or whatever it is. You know, I think you should see the series The Pacific and then decide whether he actually wants to be in the Pacific or not.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I took a class about World War II fighting and stuff, and the conditions there were, I feel like, almost worse. So, yeah, definitely.
In some places, obviously, not every place.
Yeah.
You know, and as they're walking through, they pass a bunk, you know, where you have a few of the other characters. You have Percanti there, and I think that's Ramirez. I'm not 100% sure. And then one of them goes, "Flamingos are mean. They bite." And the response is, "Yeah, so do naked native girls." And then Percanti goes, "With any luck." And then we get a little bit of bravado from Joe Toy, Kirk Acevedo, where, you know, playing with a little switchblade, and he goes, "Guys, I'm glad I'm going to Europe." He says, "Hitler gets one of these across the windpipe. Wasn't gonna change his Thanksgiving Day to Joe Toy Day, and pays me $10,000 a year for the rest of my life."
$10,000 a year back then, yeah.
How much do you think 10 grand a year back then is? Let's do that again. Let's see how good your memory is from the other day about the inflation rate between 1943 and 2025.
I'm going to say 10 grand back then is like 250 grand now.
What? Hang on. Wait, I need to do math. If 50 was that, then that means I don't know. Oh my god, it can't be like $1 million. That would be crazy.
It's not. It's not.
No. Maybe like I guess like 500 grand.
No, it's only 187,000.
Oh,
But it's still a nice amount to be
holy.
getting paid every year.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And then one of the guys goes, "Well, what if they send us to North Africa?" And then Garnier pipes in and goes, "My brother's there. He says it's hot." And Malarkey looks at him and goes, "It's hot in Africa."
That made me think of Biloxi
right.
Blues right away.
It's hot. It's like Africa hot.
Yeah.
And then Garnier goes, "Shut up."
Yeah.
Point is, no matter where we go, once we get into combat, the only person you can trust is yourself and the fella next to you. So I love the shout out because that is a
yeah.
Pelham 123 reference.
Ah, what do you mean, shout out? Very good. Walton Matthau would be proud.
Yes, I think he would.
Yes.
I think he would.
I love Guarnier. He's Frank John Hughes,
yeah.
the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's great. And I forgot that he played Sinatra in the Paramount miniseries The Offer from
right.
2 years ago. Yeah. I like did not make the connection while I was watching Band of Brothers.
Well, again,
that was like that was
it's you know 20 years earlier. So.
Yeah, true. He still looks the same though.
Yes, someone is trying to get me in touch with him. Hopefully, he will be interested in doing an interview for this. That would be great.
Oh,
someone
cool.
specifically mentioned nice. Him. You know, someone I was talking to said he just talked to him last week, and he's going to see him in a little bit over a month, and he said he's going to start talking to him to try and get him.
All right. Fingers crossed
exactly,
for that.
Fingers crossed. Again, hopefully by the time this airs, I already know the answer to that.
All right. Cool.
That'd be great. And then Hiltoy responds to Garnier and goes, "Long as he's a paratrooper."
Huh.
And then Luz goes, "Yeah? What if that paratrooper turns out to be Sobel?" If I'm next to Sobel, I'm moving down the line. Hook up with another officer like Heiliger or Winters. And then Garnier goes, "I like Winters. He's a good man. But when bullets fly, I don't know if I want a Quaker doing my fighting for me." And he goes, "How do you know he's a Quaker?" He goes, "He ain't Catholic." And then the response is, "Neither's Sobel." He goes, "That prick, he's a son of Abraham." And then we see Liebgott pipe up and he goes, "He's what?" And he goes, "He's a Jew." And Liebgott goes, he goes, "I'm a Jew." He goes, "Hey, congratulations. Get your nose out of my face." So this is one of the big mistakes in the series. Liebgott was not Jewish. The two big things that they got wrong here so far that I'm currently thinking of that I'm aware of are the Liebgott thing being a Jew, because later on when they get to the concentration camp, there's also that whole scene with that. And the whole Blythe thing. Which again, I don't know the answer to that. How that actually happened? You know, they thought Blythe died, and it's completely different than what happened in reality. But whatever. So you know, this is a great little scene, because what it's showing us is that these men are in cramped quarters, and they're just getting on each other's nerves so much. You know, over little things, I don't know if you want to say silly things, but over little things, little silly things. As it.
Well, I mean, even though the camaraderie between the guys is fantastic, I mean, you're in these cramped quarters, you know, it probably, like you said, smells, you're not eating, there's nothing to do, and you just can't help but get on each other's nerves, so. And you're just looking at the same faces for how many – it's not like the right setting to be looking at the same faces.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Exactly. Again, I think anyone – you know, if you have 5,000 guys cramped into an area like this, it's going to be easy to get on people's nerves. I mean, I'm surprised that you know, we don't see guys fighting who are gambling together you know, someone trying to shoot someone else because of that, that they claim that they stole their money. You know, it's just like the type of chaos that you would expect from something like this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting the way that they do that. Then the shot changes and we see, you know, two other guys and one turns to the other and goes, what's all that about? He goes, gonorrhea called Sobel a Jew. Levi took offense because he's a Jew too. And then he goes, fighting over Sobel. Yeah, that's real smart. it's nice to show us what's going on here. Yeah, and these guys just keep playing cards. I was trying to figure out what game they're playing because he's got too many cards in his hand to be playing poker. Maybe they're playing gin.
Probably like a gin or like gin rummy. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. I'm not 100% sure. It's hard to tell.
Could even be a go fish. Who knows?
It could be. Could be.
Yeah.
Then again, it fades to black, and it tells us September 18th, 1943, Aldbourne, England. And first of all, it's a very it's a great shot of a pastoral area. You know, I like the way that they show us that. Then we see a few planes fly overhead. I guess sort of trick us into thinking that it's going to be something else that's going on here. Then it really is. I don't know. It begins to focus in on a little town, and then the shot changes and we see men training for combat. And, you know, one of the instructors goes, attack. He goes, no, you want to kill him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the training sessions of hand-to-hand combat. And then we get to see some with bayonets where someone goes, parry right, parry light, front. Sorry, parry right, parry left, front, recover. And then we see them in a classroom and we see Welsh giving a class. And he goes, okay, we talked about magnetic declination and the left add, right subtract rule. Today, we'll use it. Do either of you have any idea what they're talking about there?
I have no clue whatsoever.
Can you repeat that one more time?
We talked about magnetic declination and the left add, right subtract rule. Today we'll use it.
Oh my gosh, I have no idea.
Okay, well, if you have it in front of you, if you're watching the screen, what do you see around the room?
Hold on, I didn't have it in front of me. So unprepared.
It's at minute 2:54 of this segment.
Is it maybe like navigation, like magnetic, like compass?
That's what it is.
Very good.
Yeah.
See? Told you she's smarter than me.
I was just thinking like magnet, compass.
Yeah. Basically they're training them about map reading and compass reading and stuff like that. Navigation. That's what it comes down to.
Maybe Sobel should be in this class.
Yeah, I was gonna say
probably, but I don't think he would take a class that Welsh is teaching. But if you look around, you see on the back, you see all these various maps that are showing things. And then the shot changes slightly, and we see the men trying to pay attention to what they're being taught. And then if you look carefully, you can see on the left hand side of the screen a whole bunch of weapons. And they, you know, they're bound to the wall on each of them. But then you see that there are plaquettes next to them that are explaining each of the weapons, what they are and what's good and things like that. You know, like you see the MP40, it's the same as the MP38, slightly lighter. Would you say it that way? Would you say slightly lighter? I don't even know if that's proper English.
Slightly lighter?
You're an editor.
I know.
And then it says slower rate
really,
of fire.
That's so weird.
Designed for mass production.
Mass production, yeah.
Slightly.
Interesting. Yeah, it's like a quick at a glance exactly. of the weapons.
But again, it's good that it shows that this classroom, you know, that's where they're training everyone. And these guys are all writing all this stuff down to be able to figure it out. So yeah, it's interesting. And you know, then we continue with the rocky positions of you know, the men are digging, and we see Lip training them, and he goes, there are two basic fighting positions. The first is a prepared position. This position's advantages are that it gives you cover and concealment. And then the shot changes, and we see them on the firing range. Commence fire! and we see a whole bunch of a lot of the men shooting from various weapons. We see someone with a pistol, we see someone with a machine gun, someone with an M1. And then we get a training session that's being given by Sync. Once again, Dale Dye is doing what he does best. And he says, "We'll maneuver through these trees. At the same time, our second platoon, in this case, moves over here. He'll then kill or capture that German." And again, it's nice that he has this little map and he's showing them, what they're going to be doing, what's supposed to be done.
I wonder if Dale Dye drew that map.
It's a very good question. If I ever speak to him, I will try to remember to ask that question. I don't believe that I will speak to him, but if I do, I will try to remember.
No. And there's the little swastika in the middle of like the land area. Yes. Yeah.
This is the area where there are Germans.
Yes.
But if you look on the bottom, it has E2/506, which means Easy Company, Second Platoon, 506.
Mm-hmm. I like that too.
And it's a good thing to have easels there in order to be able to prop up their chalkboards.
Yes, I'm sure there was plenty of room for those.
Yeah, those they probably procured in England. Yeah. That's what I would think.
Oh, they didn't bring American easels?
you can't have everything made in America. As much as
that's definitely true.
One of those things. you'll just have to deal with it.
Yes, I will.
Yeah,
sorry.
Certain things just you don't have a choice of.
Yeah, there probably wasn't room in the barracks for those anyway.
No, but in the only Sync needed it. Makes you wonder if Sync, how he got over. If he flew over, or if he went over by transport. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's a great.
My assumption is he flew over because I only know that because of a movie that I just saw last year. That was a World War II movie, The 6888. Did you ever see that movie?
No, it's on the list.
About a year ago.
That's on
Netflix. About a year ago. As of recording, it hasn't been a year yet, but. When this episode drops, it will be more than a year since I saw it. And it's about a group of African American female soldiers who were given a task that no one thought that they could do by trying to sort out the way that the mail was being done and sent. Hmm. And
yeah, interesting. Yeah, I wanted to see that. It's definitely definitely on the list.
It was actually very good. So in that movie, the commander of the 6888, she flew to England, as opposed to going on. All of the women in the unit went by transport, and she, as the commander, was flown across with other commanders. So my assumption is that Sync flew across.
Yeah, I guess that's A, that's your rank, and B, you get to set stuff up.
Exactly.
So.
And it's actually funny. I never even thought about that till we just came across that right now. And then I remembered in that movie they showed it. And they continue showing us more training exercises. We see someone shooting a bazooka, and then we see the men all running, and Winters is guiding them and giving them instructions. And he points to the men that they need to go to a certain place on the side, and they end up, finding some cover. He's there with Lip, and he turns to Lip and goes, "Sobel's late." Mm-hmm. And that's all I have to say. You don't really even have this conversation. Sobel's late. That's it. Mm-hmm. And then we get another shot in an open field. We see Sobel running with a group of men, and then Sobel goes, "Why is there a fence here? There should be no fence here. Tipper, give me that map." So Tipper gives him the map. Yeah. And it's funny that Tipper pulls the map out from in his shirt. He's running with it in his shirt. And then Sergeant Evans stands next to him. Do either of you recognize Sergeant Evans? You know who the actor is who plays Sergeant Evans?
Hold on.
You can see him in minute 4:14 of this segment.
He looks familiar, but I'm
He's a very
sure.
famous British actor. Now, back then he wasn't. No.
It's not James McAvoy, right? No. Okay, hold on. Evans is on his left. Is that Simon Pegg?
Yes, it is. Very good.
Okay.
Yes, that is
so young.
Yes.
Yeah. He's in Shaun of the Dead, right?
Yeah.
He's the main character in Shaun of the Dead. And then Sobel realizes that he's leaving his men out in the open. He goes, Picanti, lose. Get the men. Get them back. Take over behind those trees. And he goes, all right, let's go. Move it out. And he goes, there should be no fence here. And Evans then turns to him and goes, well, we could go over it, sir. He goes, really? That's not the point. Where the goddamn hell are we? And we see him just putzing around trying to figure it out. I'm not really sure. Again, showing us clearly how much he should have been in that little instructional scene that Welsh was explaining about about magnetic declination that we were talking about. And I love his jacket. This does not look like a standard issue jacket.
No. That looks like a jacket for a G.I. Joe doll.
Yes, that's true. Could be. Right.
Although I think there's similar ones in The Great Escape, but
yes.
This one looks shiny and new because it's Sobel. He has to get the newest.
No, but aren't those jackets from the guys in the Air Force? Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really stands out.
Yeah,
too.
For sure. And again, he's supposed to.
Yeah. Well, he wants to make sure he does.
Right. And then the men hiding over in the bushes. So, Picanti, yeah. Still was lost again, right? Yeah. Fucking Christ. And he calls over and he goes, hey, Luz, can you do Major Horton? Does a wild bear crap in the woods, son? And he says to him, maybe that Major can goose this schmuck.
No.
Yeah. So, again, we're going to have to wait until tomorrow to find out what exactly they have planned. But this is a great scene, and it's a great way of showing the way that these men are basically coming together as a team.
Yes, they have mutual disrespect for Sobel also, yes. Right.
Exactly. All right. Do either of you have anything else you want to say about this particular episode or the segment? Or anything about the series in general?
Cass, you go first.
I just want to say I feel like the series as a whole taught me a lot about World War II. I mean, I'm a big history buff, so it's like, and this isn't the type of thing that like I ever really like learned about in a class. Like, I didn't learn about the Easy Company or anything. So like getting to learn about them and getting to see, I guess, kind of like what it was like, and seeing the interviews with like the actual like soldiers and everything and the actual people like was so interesting to me. So just overall I really really liked it, and sad we can't talk about the actual prank on Sobel, but that's okay.
No. Someone else gets that that ability tomorrow.
Yeah, I also it was better than I remembered the miniseries, especially the last three episodes probably, I think, were great. And it's like every couple of minutes, like you said, just seeing Simon Pegg, every couple of minutes you're like, hey, it's that guy. And it's somebody you might not know, but you have to look him up to get the name. And I didn't even catch it that was Simon Pegg till I really looked. But everything is just so good from start to finish. It's super realistic. Like, the voiceovers are great. I like how they do that. And the interviews with the soldiers are fantastic, like Cassie said. And just so well done. Like, just one of the best World War II things ever made.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. I mean, as much as I really enjoyed The Pacific and the Masters of the Earth, neither one of them were able to reach the bar.
Hmm. I'll let you know after I watch them.
Okay.
Yeah, I've not gotten to
the seen Masters of the Air yet.
Masters of the Air, no. The Pacific, I want to say I've seen, but I would have remembered it, so I probably haven't seen it. But no, Masters of the Air, again, it's on the long, long list of things to watch.
Okay, I am going to I don't want to spoil anything for you, but I want to bump it up your list. So take that recommendation from me. Trust me.
I will.
Trust me.
Okay.
And All right, so today's segment is a segment that I'm calling "Oh Brother," and we're going to talk about your favorite brothers in movies.
Okay.
Yay.
So
All right.
I think this time, Joe, I think you go first this time.
Yeah, Dad,
Yes,
go first.
I do. All right, so let me. So I have a tri-level honorable mention here.
Okay.
So basic honorable mentions are, of course, I have to get 70s movies in. So I got The Godfather and Marathon Man. Also, The Fabulous Baker Boys, which is such a great movie, and Rain Man, and also Twins, which is, again, I love movies that are quotable. Twins, so quotable. I mean, Born to Be Bad. You can't go wrong with that. But my honorable mention too, yeah, I call it my top 10 honorable mention. These movies, there's two movies that are not really about brothers, but the brothers in the movies are maybe the most memorable characters in the movies. That is Lyle and Tector Gorch from The Wild Bunch, played by Warren Oates and Ben Johnson, and Gale and Evel Snotes from the one of the greatest comedies ever made, at Raising Arizona, played by John Goodman and William Forsythe. Definitely four of the most memorable characters in those two films. And then my third honorable mention is my special, the host with the most honorable mention, and that is in honor of Tom Flynn, Cassie's godfather, who is no longer with us. There are two movies about brothers that he would quote endlessly. One is Phantasm. He loved the Phantasm movies. I think he's the only person I know that loved the Phantasm movies. And he would always just every once in a while he'd just come out with, "Boy." And also a movie which I forgot is about brothers, and that is Kaoma, the spaghetti western. Tom was the biggest spaghetti western fan ever, but he would always quote the line from the trailer where Woody Strode goes to Franco Nero. He goes, "Kaoma, you can't do it alone." And Franco Nero as Kaoma goes, "But I must do it alone, because I am alone." And it's like, wait, what? So anyway, now they took up a half hour. So my number five is another Tom Flynn favorite. And that is, and you forget that they're brothers, but I mean, obviously they are brothers, but it's easy to forget when you're watching the movie. And this is a movie that was famously called out by Brad Pitt at the 2012 Oscar ceremony, and that is War of the Gargantuas. An excellent kaiju movie. Probably it's underrated in the genre, and definitely worth a watch.
Okay, I've never heard of that.
Oh, it's good. You got to it's when Brad Pitt said it, we were actually in Georgia during the Oscar ceremony when Brad Pitt came out and he was talking about movies and he said War of the Gargantuas. I was like, "Wait, what?" I couldn't believe. I was like, "Oh my God, I love Brad Pitt just for that."
Okay. More of the Gargantuas from 1963.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, good stuff.
Russ Tamblyn. Okay, of course. When
Oh
you got
yeah.
riff there, you're good.
Exactly. All right, Cass, you're up.
Okay, so my honorable mentions are, I mean, the Diary of a Wimpy Kid movies, because, again, people from my generation, just, we love those movies. I mean, there was a whole hashtag not my Roderick movement that they changed the actor and everybody got mad, but that's an honorable mention just because there's, like, better movies, you know? And another honorable mention is, of course, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, who are awesome. Name a closer pair of four brothers, you won't. And they're just really cool. But my number five is this movie. It's terrible, but it's so terrible, and I have so many fun memories for it. It's called Three Pigs and a Baby, and it's this animated movie. And like John Cryer's in it, Steve Zahn, who's also in Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Brad Garrett, and I was in Disney with my friends, and we were looking for something to watch. And oddly enough, on those TVs, there's no Disney movie channel. So we were like, what is this movie? Like, it's so terrible, but it was just so funny that it's terrible. And now, like, our group chat is named Three Pigs and a Baby because of it. Like, me and my two friends, we just love this movie. Like, it's so hilariously bad that it just had to be number five on the list.
Okay.
You know?
You
It's like,
you
so
both
bad it's
surprised me
good.
with number fives that I've never heard of. So there you go.
Yeah. And then I do my number four now,
Yes.
right? So my number four is Step Brothers, just because I just think that that movie is just amazingly funny. I feel like it's like always on TV, and there's definitely a good reason why. I mean, it's just hilarious, and you know, sometimes brotherhood comes from the blending of families rather than being blood families, you know? So yeah.
Okay. Joe, you're number four.
My number four, was a favorite of mine in the 4:30 movie, and it's a fun Western, Bandolero, with Jimmy Stewart and Dean Martin. Good stuff. It's just a lot of fun. Always loved it. Again, movie I have not seen in a long time, but it brought back great memories, and it was the first movie I thought of with brothers. For whatever reason, I don't know why, but that was the first movie that came to my head. Number three, I'm going to go with A Simple Plan, Billy Bob Thornton, Bill Paxton. I love the book by Scott Smith, fantastic book, and I love the adaptation. It was so well done. Even the stuff they changed subtly from the book was really well done. Excellent, Simple Plan. That's my number three.
Okay, Cassie.
So my number three is The Prince of Egypt, the animated DreamWorks movie. I just think that this movie is like gorgeous. It was like kind of, I think it was like one of the first to blend like the hand-drawn animation with the CGI, and it has like a stellar cast. I mean, like you have Sandra Bullock, Jeff Goldblum, Val Kilmer, like I think even Patrick Stewart might be in it. Like just all these people. Music by Hans Zimmer. He's awesome. A song with Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey. I mean, I just think that this movie, like, I'm happy that I just think it's beautiful. And I love like Bible stuff. Like I went to Catholic school and I read the Bible. I have a Bible trivia board game. So, you know, it's just like I just love that type of stuff. So it's my number three.
And she crushes everyone when we play.
Yeah.
Okay, you're number three.
And then my
Oh, sorry, number two. Sorry, you're number two.
number two. Yeah. Okay. My number two, I mean, is it technically about brothers? Maybe like kind of like, but it's It, the one from 2017. I love this movie. I mean, it starts because Bill is trying to find out what happened to his little
That's right,
brother,
Georgie.
what happened to Georgie. And then, you know, like the Losers Club, sure they're not blood related, but they're brothers, and then there's Beverly's sister. But like, you know, it's just like maybe it's not technically about brothers, but I love that movie. I think I saw it in the theaters like three times. I love it. So,
Okay.
yeah.
All right, Joe, you're number two.
My number two is a chance for me to give a shout out to my favorite director, and that is A Better Tomorrow, the original, not the Korean remake. That is the movie that helped put John Woo on the map. It's starts all of the John Woo-isms in a way. Chow Yun-fat is fantastic in it, even though he's really a supporting role, not the lead. Yeah, but the byplay between the two brothers, so great. I have to sit down and watch the trilogy again one of these days. And my number one is The Blues Brothers. It's one of my top 20 films, favorite films of all time. I could watch it every day. I could sing most of the songs. I think I know just about all the words. And yeah, Blues Brothers, just great from start to finish.
All right, that is great. And Cassie, what is your number one?
My number one is one of a very underrated Disney movie called Brother Bear. And it's not only underrated because it came out the year I was born, but I really enjoy this movie, and I feel like not a lot of people talk about it, even though Joaquin Phoenix is in it, which is really cool. But I just love Brother Bear. I feel like it's kind of like touching because it's another one that kind of starts with like this the guy, like he kills this mama bear because she killed his brother, but then he finds a brother in her little cub that, like, because he becomes a bear and then he makes friends with the cub, and it's like, it's just like kind of like found family, but also like real brotherhood, like fam, like blood family. So I really love it. And when I went to Disneyland, I went to a character breakfast, and Kenai and Coda were there, and Kenai, the older bear, tried to steal me because I was, I think, the only kid in there that was like, "I love your movie. I love Brother Bear. Like, you're awesome." And he tried to whisk me away. He took me from my table. There's pictures. And
Yes, there
yeah.
is photographic evidence of that. Yes, important. It's
But
important.
yeah, Disney has a really cool movie.
And Phil Collins, hello.
Oh yeah, duh, the Phil Collins. Phil Collins does the music. I mean, what could be better? On My Way, very good song. One of Phil Collins's best. So, you know.
All right, excellent. As both of you have great lists, really. A lot of movies I didn't even think would be on these lists, so that's good too.
I'm
Not
trying to
the
keep it
worst, of
interesting
course.
for you, Rob.
We gotta keep you on your
That
toes.
you definitely do.
Yeah.
You definitely All right, so we will now play for the final time, the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So let's spin the wheel and
Right.
see whether you're gonna be able to guess it just by the year.
All right.
This is a little tougher. A little tougher than
Oh, all right.
Okay. This is a movie from 1977 that gives the German
Ooh.
side of part of the war.
Oh.
Okay. Cross of Iron.
Joe, unbelievable.
Well,
Wow. that is one of my top five favorite World War II movies. So I love Sam Peckinpah. He's one of my favorite directors.
And it's understandable why.
Yeah, Cross of Iron is such a great movie. And famously, they only had two tanks. They were only able to get two tanks, and one of them didn't work half the time. And but the way Peckinpah shot it didn't look like two tanks.
That was before people
Yeah.
started losing faith in Peckinpah, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, drugs and alcohol, and yeah, he's interesting character, Sam. Very interesting
Definitely agree.
character.
All right. Excellent. Thank you both for being on these last few days.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Absolutely.
Thank you for
Yeah,
having
it's
us.
been great. So why don't you once again tell people where they can find you, though?
All right, so I'm on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, that stuff, and I will someday, maybe in the future, be on my dad's blog, which he will tell you about right now.
That blog is called Von Luger's Butter, and you can find it at torahfish.wordpress.com. You can also catch me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, and the wonderful Letterboxd. And that's about it.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So once again, I want to thank you both for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I will be back tomorrow with yet another guest. But until then, hurry.
Hurry.